see. How are the numbers as far as flu vaccinations going? What are we seeing so far early on in this flu season?
Well, we're seeing that, at least from surveys initially, that there are more Americans this year that are willing to take the flu shot. We hope to transform those survey numbers to actual numbers. We do know that there are not anticipated to be any shortages of the supply of the flu vaccine. We also know that the flu vaccine is more available now than almost any time in the past, meaning it's available in your local pharmacies, local health departments, as well as your physician offices and some of the mass clinics that may be held based on where you live, whether it's your employer or your school.
I got my flu shot 2 days ago, and I still have the Bugs Bunny Band-Aid to prove it. So, but I'm curious, why is there such a prevalence of the vaccine this year? Are manufacturers making more? Are they expecting something? Why is it that it's more prevalent or more available this year than in years past?
Sure. So the process of the development and manufacturing of a flu vaccine actually begins almost a year ahead of when it's available. And that includes looking at the past year, looking at surveillance of the strains that are happening in the southern hemisphere. Because remember, the southern hemisphere of Earth has their winter when we have our summer. They're ahead of us.
Right.
So what happens over our summer is development of the vaccine based on what the strains are and based on how the vaccine match occurs there. So that all happens that results in both taking into account any more antigenic shifts or drifts. That means that the virus changed or the number of viruses have changed. And then you develop into a supply. And just like we're seeing with the COVID vaccine, you got to make sure the supply is safe, it's not having its side effects and things like that. And the smoother the process is, we're always getting better, the more likely that we can have a good supply. Also, what helps is a lot of the new vaccines that are being developed, there's around 187 different vaccine candidates for COVID that are in various stages of, preclinical and clinical development. Many of them, if not all of them, are actually looking at platforms that are different than the flu vaccine platform. So we've been able to not limit the supply of the flu vaccine because that's a separate track that is going on. What is important is that we're looking at now, you could say second or third in some cases of spikes of COVID cases across the country, including the state of Washington. So when that happens, increases in hospitalizations follow in a few days. And when that happens, there's a capacity issue that develops. So what we don't want to happen over the fall and winter time is that the capacity is already being taken over for hospitals by COVID situation, and people are getting sick and being in ICUs. And then people get on top of that sick from flu, which is quite preventable. And then we have more deaths from either of the cases because people can't find a place in an overwhelmed medical system.
Are we seeing or expecting with this the flu to be the flu itself, the flu virus to be, say, less severe than it has been in other in previous years, or are we looking at the opposite?
Well, we know for sure that we're dealing with two great and grave public health threats colliding together. Now, we have seen a lesser of a flu season in the southern hemisphere. We also know that when oftentimes there are multiple viruses floating around, one tends to be predominant. We saw that with the H1N1 as opposed to the other strains of the flu during the 2009 pandemic. And that H1N1 strain has continued to dominate the circulation since then. So the logic and reason would say that the much more life-threatening, fatal, and infectious disease of COVID may be more predominant than the flu. However, nothing so far, or a lot of things so far have not been so logical, whether it's the mask wearing, it's the social distancing. You know, logic would have predicted that we would have this under control. We would not have, you know, well over 217,000 deaths. We would not have over 8 million cases in our nation. But logic has not held up, unfortunately, this time around.
Logic doesn't seem to be present this year at all anywhere. So in any event, you're a doctor. You know this type of stuff. This is your ball game. What do you think about what the feds have done as far as COVID is concerned? Are you disappointed with how they've handled this?
It is disappointing to see that in the most developed and most powerful nation on the face of the earth, that we have a response like the one we do, which has sacrificed the lives of so many Americans unnecessarily and put at risk so many millions of others. It is, however, clear, and let's make no mistake about it, that if we continue the path that we are on, there will be more deaths. That's what the CDC expects. That's what most of my colleagues are expecting. And there's no vaccine that can put, you know, sanity in us, put common sense in us. So what we're going to have to figure out is how to, you know, get all of us together as a community. We have to respond to this pandemic just like we have responded as a nation to previous challenges, whether they've been wars, they've been disease, and other challenges. We have to respond to this as one nation. We cannot respond to this as a divided nation. So I think it's very important that our politicians align with our scientific experts and science and embrace it and actually follow the advice of the experts that are so much hard at work and support those workers that are sacrificing their lives, because this includes the first responders, this includes the healthcare professionals, this includes the grocery workers that are having to choose between getting sick and putting food on the table. There's a lot of aspects of American life that is being impacted, and so, so critical that our elected officials really understand that we cannot any longer afford to continue the path we've been on for the last 7 months.
Are you pleased with any state, since it seems to be a state, you know, state by state, the responses to COVID seems to vary where you live. I mean, here I'm in Washington State, where this whole thing began, and where the first cases came through, supposedly. But we had a fast response to it from the municipal leaders in Seattle and on a statewide level, even though we're still seeing upticks in cases here. Are there places that you're happy with how they have responded? Are there some states that have done better, in your opinion, than others?
Absolutely. And if you look at the reason for that, states like Washington, who have actually embraced science, have followed measures that are being dictated and recommended through scientific experts, have done well. So this is not an unknown. This is actually the failure in those states who have done poorly to act on the facts that we know about. It's a failure of the will to be persistent in order to protect Americans. So we have seen proportionality in both underserved populations, insurance access, but more importantly, where lockdowns have happened, the advice of public health experts has been followed. Those states and communities are doing much better. Those who have taken a risky approach have not done so well. So it's very important, as we move forward, we follow the basic fundamental guidelines of wearing a mask, not gathering in large crowds, social distancing, getting out there only as much as we need to, having, as Dr. Fauci has said, single household celebrations for holidays. Those are things that are not designed to get people isolated. Those are things designed to protect ourselves and the most vulnerable within our communities. And those states that are doing well at it, like Washington, are reaping the benefits. And these benefits are no longer limited to health. These benefits are now translating into economic prosperity and health. So it's very important. We're seeing millions of job losses. We're seeing industries collapse. So it, at this point, becomes not only a health issue, but also an economic issue for our states and for our nation.
Last question here. There are people who just do not like vaccinations, don't believe in them or anything like that. Are they the cause for lower levels of vaccination, or is it something else that's in our healthcare system that's doing this?
It is a small portion of people who are just adamantly against any types of vaccine for their own reasons. The majority of Americans may feel a little hesitant. It's a new vaccine. And it's okay to feel cautious about a substance that you're going to inject in your body. What is important is for our government to have a process which is transparent in terms of discovery and manufacturing, as well as supply and distribution. So it's important for us to ensure a transparent process that can garner the trust of the American public in the vaccine, so that vaccine hesitancy transforms into vaccine uptake and effectiveness. So it's very important for us to not only have a safe and effective vaccine, which we think we're going to have one or two or more, but it's also important for us to make sure that effectiveness and safety of that vaccine is communicated to everybody. And at the same time, we have a robust system of monitoring the progress. So because there's no doubt in my mind, side effects will happen. They always do. They happen with the H1N1 vaccine. But important to maintain the trust of people off the vaccine by robustly investigating those and having a system that, again, develops the trust of the public in the vaccine, and at the same time, having a supply and distribution routes that are fair and that are equitable, so that people who are most at risk are able to get the vaccine earlier, because we know that the supply, just the supply chain as well as the supply, is going to be an issue. Not everybody is going to be able to get the vaccine at the same time in this country and across the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know I've got to let you go here, Dr. Gupta, but again, where do we go to find out more about the vaccines and whatever, and as far as the March of Dimes is concerned?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of good places to go to. MarchofDimes.org is certainly a place. You can go to the CDC website as well, cdc.gov. There's plenty of good information on there. And it's important to make informed decisions and stay up to date, because it's very, very critical that once the vaccine becomes available and we have the trust in the safety and efficacy of the vaccine, we have the regulatory agencies, of which experts and scientists are standing ready to evaluate and approve, then we do not take risk and take the vaccine. Meanwhile, we have something we can do right now and today, which is take the flu vaccine and protect ourselves against at least one of those two challenges. And for the other, we make sure that we're wearing masks, we're not participating in large gatherings, and we're maintaining our social distancing and washing our hands regularly.
There we go. There we go. Dr. Gupta, I thank you for a few minutes out. This is it's always fun talking to, it's fun talking with you, and very informative too. And I thank you for some time out. I wish you the best.
Thank you so much, Ken. I appreciate it. Appreciate you doing it.
You take care, sir. Thanks. Bye now.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.